You are now listening to the Jason Capital Show. So sit down and lend me your ears.
I am Jason Capital. You are an action taker in this world of talkers, and we are here together handcrafting your legendary life. I got it. I'll say it because you won't. It was only for my audience, and I'm aware. Sharon said influencer whores.
Stop being an influencer whore.
Hey, what's going on? It's Jason Capital here, and welcome to Deconstructing Mastery. This is not a podcast. This is not an interview. And I don't know how it's been for you, Sharon, but in my experience, I've always found that I learn the best when I can just be a fly on the wall and listen. And yeah. I always thought, how cool would it be if I could just do that for people who are masters of what they did and just pick out the little intricacies, the little insights, the little distinctions that they've made. Yeah. So that's all this is. Sharon, by the way, so you guys know, has no idea what this is about. Doesn't even know what we're talking about. And I told him that's the whole point. We're just gonna talk like we would as if we were getting lunch, which we do all the time, and just whatever comes out.
Yeah, awesome.
And see if we can help anyone at all, even a little bit. So for those that don't know, just a quick background. This is Sharon Srivatsa. He is freaking amazing. I first met Sharon probably 2.5 years ago at a mastermind. And although we're both not in the mastermind anymore, we are very, very, very good friends. Yeah. And we're even working on some things together. Sharon grew Telus Properties, which was a real estate company here in Southern California, from about $300 million to $3.4 billion in 5 years. That's 10x in 5 years. Exited that company to Douglas Elliman. You've been involved in all kinds of deals, several exits. You are a mentor to some of the top CEOs in the world today, and you're a genius at it. And
thank you.
No, I mean that, and I'm really excited to have you here so we can see what comes out. Maybe we'll learn something from Sharon. Wouldn't that be shocking, right?
thank you for having me.
I'm so glad to have you here. So let's just start here, right? Bedros Koulian calls you the king of scale. What does it mean to scale, and why do so many people suck at it?
Yeah, I think the one topic that you and I talk about often is there's this concept that everyone's saying, hey, you gotta hustle. You gotta hustle. Like, the hustle thing is, for some reason, a badge of honor for people. But when you start the business with hustle in mind, you end up saying, I gotta grind and hustle and grind and hustle. But once you do that, it's very hard to break out of the hustle and grind trap. And then what you do is, you've taught me this, you become a prisoner of the hustle. You become a prisoner of the grind. And then it's really hard to break out of that business model that you've set for yourself. I always tell people, hey, hustle and grind leaves you tired and resentful. Build your business with systems and scale. And so when you think of systems and scale, how can you be, a lot of people call this the idea of being a replaceable founder. You and I talk a lot about the idea of being a founder, which is what is the talent that you bring to the table, and how can you build a team around you or systems around you or processes around you to manifest that talent in the deepest and most sincere way. Scale comes when you can make a promise, and you can actually, it's not scaling a business, it's scaling the promise, right? And you say, hey, let me show, like you've always told me, there's three of the core high income skills in the world: copy, speaking, closing. I learned that from you. And your promise is, hey, I wanna build 100 millionaires, right? You're not saying I wanna build three.
Correct.
And the promise is not about building the millionaire, the promise is scaling that promise. So if we don't build anything that we do with scale in mind, that means we don't have the promise right. And I always, like when I dig into the CEOs of company, I'm like, what is the promise? Yeah, you have the half-baked business model, but what is the promise? Because then we can really scale the promise. So I always think about how do you scale the promise and not just scaling the business.
So is the first step figuring out what is the promise that your target market is like dying for someone to whisper in their ear?
Yeah, totally, right? And a lot of times, you know, you and I are big Dan Kennedy fans, right? Good old Mean Dan, right? Sure. And he always says, hey, listen, do you want a great burger or do you want a great restaurant? And then people are like, oh, I want a great burger because the product is like, neither, you want the hungry crowd, right? And so, but when you can figure out the promise to the hungry crowd, then it becomes easy to find the hungry crowd, scale the hungry crowd, et cetera. So for me, it's always about how can I fall in love with this promise that I'm so committed to? And that starts to really manifest.
And so I think so much of it is actually listening to that hungry crowd, to what it is that they want.
Totally.
Like if they're there and they got credit cards in there and they're like, cheeseburgers with grilled onions, cheeseburgers with grilled onions, for some reason, if you come out with a hamburger with raw onions on the side and you're like, here you go, they're gonna be like, screw you. Yeah, that's not what we want at all. And this is what most marketers are doing. They are close to what the market wants. They don't truly listen to what they're saying and they can't deliver on it. I'll give you an example. And this comes to really truly understanding your prospect on a deep level, which we talk about all the time. So I was doing one of my weekly mentoring calls for my $10 a month group last week. And a lot of it for me is research because I get them all live and I get to hear, it's great. And I mentioned this idea where I was like, how many of you have ever had a job or you're in a job right now where someone above you promises you a promotion, promises you a raise, something, some carrot on the horizon, and you get excited about it. And then it never comes, or they keep delaying it, or they keep letting you down. And more than half the people, and there's a couple hundred on this thing live, more than half of them, me, that's happening right now. That's why I joined this thing, Jason. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, holy shit, this is what, this is one of those, it's one of those little pain points that I wasn't aware of. Now that I know it, I can reflect it back to them. Right? I always say, like, you want to be the genie. The genie doesn't instruct desires, he satisfies them.
That's good.
Imagine if Aladdin came out of the bottle and was like, here, let me tell you what you want. Right? He'd be like, screw you. No, I tell you what I want, you deliver. And that's what we as marketers need to be. We don't instruct them. We don't educate them what they want. What are the desires that are already existing? How can we harness those and associate them with our promise, with our product? Yeah. So you're saying once you nail that down, scaling's easy, right?
Yeah, and what you and I have been talking about for 2.5 years now is switching this paradigm of the internet marketing thing is a vehicle. Internet marketers are cool. Like, I appreciate them a lot. And you are, I don't consider you an internet marketer. I consider you are an evangelist for entrepreneurs. Like you want to like change the world, right? To me, it is about, internet marketing is just a function of the business. So if internet marketing is your business, like, it's just going to break, right? And so, like, I don't, whether I get 100 Instagram followers or two, whether I get a bunch of likes or not, whether I get a bunch of people in my funnel or not, like, that doesn't bother me on a day-to-day basis. But people live and die by registrations and subscribers. Like, I call them, you know, you're either a lead junkie or a deal monkey. Like, I tell people all the time, are you a lead junkie because you get really excited by opt-ins and subscriptions? Or you're a deal monkey because they went through the funnel and you sold them something, you want to sell them something more, and you keep, wallowing between lead junkie and deal monkey. That's not how you build a business. And that's what, you know, the early internet marketers, they were like, this is amazing. I got this new vehicle. Like, how can I build this funnel to get someone to sell something? But for you and me, it is, hey, you come into my group. And that's just the introduction. Because yes, I have a business, but our business is built on impact. Our business is built on value. Our business is built on the long tail of delivering and scaling that promise. So to me, it's all about, how do I build that business? And the business is the promise.
Yes.
And the internet marketing or any other vehicles are all just avenues to scale that promise.
Yes, it's exactly right. Yeah, those early internet marketers, it's because a lot of them had odd jobs. They do random things and they're like, holy crap, I can make money from my laptop. And you're right, you're a lead junkie, those are great terms, right? And you're like, this worked, let me create another funnel and another funnel and another funnel. And before you know it, you're funneled out, right? You're sitting on the couch with a bunch of needles in front of you with an opt-in funnel and a webinar funnel needle, right? And you're just like, I can't take anymore. And you're exhausted, right? And you feel like the sled dog inside of your business instead of the top dog in your industry. And you look at any industry, people at the top, they're like the top dogs of industry. No matter what it is, those people, they're not creating funnels every week or every month or worrying about the next leads or the next promotion.
Right.
There's a certain sense of calm. I love Richard Koch, who wrote 80-20. He goes, any business I look to invest in, I always want to visit the office. And if it seems like everyone's excited and chaotic and doing things, he goes, that's not the business I want to be a part of. He goes, I want to go in the office where everyone looks lazy, but the numbers are really good. He goes, that's the business I want to be in.
Yeah. Yeah, it's to me, I think a lot about, I work really hard, I hustle really hard to get the formula.
Yes.
You and I get the formula a lot, right?
Yes.
And then once you get the formula, you're like, okay, I got the formula. Does it align with my promise? Now how do I actually go scale this promise? And I'll tell like everybody out there, you know, your fans and your evangelists, what's the business? And people think about, how do I make money? It's like, no, it's you get paid as a result of delivering a promise. And the one word that's really bothering me these days a lot is value. Like, everyone is like, oh, you have to show up and give value. What does that mean? I just don't understand what is that. And so for you, I know what value means to you. You want to be like, when I leave a meeting with you, I go, oh my gosh, like, I, even if I wrote notes for the next 5 hours, like, I can't deconstruct everything that I learned with my time with Jason. But for a lot of people, value is just a 10-point checklist. Well, what the heck is that, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think value has gotten really mixed with the promise. Mm-hmm. And yes, a value can lead to the promise, but the promise is everything. The promise is, like you and I, we talk a lot about, the world doesn't need saving, the world just needs more entrepreneurs. Like I always tell people, hey, you wanna make a dent in this industry? I don't know what that means, but I wanna create 100 millionaires that you can track. Like that means something. Like I can wake up in the morning and say, I've made 3 so far, which you already have,
right?
Without even trying, right? And now, you know, we're working on ideas to scale that promise, which, mm-hmm. which is awesome.
Yeah, it's, I'll tell you, one of the, like that lead,
lead junkie,
deal yeah. monkey, like that was me in my early 20s and in my mid 20s. And it's just like, like literally, I do a funnel and a promotion, and then I go to Vegas. And I do a funnel and promotion, and then I go back to, like, it was a pattern. It was a very fun pattern, but it's an exhausting pattern.
Yeah.
And everyone was like telling me, you gotta have systems in your business. You need a structure, you need employees. But no one actually told me, like, here's how you actually do it. And then you said something to me called cadence of accountability.
Yeah.
And it was like you were singing, right? To my ears, like music to my ears. Can you describe what is a cadence of accountability and why businesses need it in order to replace the hustle with scale?
Yeah, totally. So let's go the soft way and then we'll go with the mechanical way. So when we ran our real estate business, we had 22 offices across 450 miles and, you know, 700-ish people just in selling stuff. And I was like, I physically can't be in all of these locations. But how do I build culture across these locations? And so people always say, oh, culture is what you feel when people are not there. I'm like, whatever. Like the old adages are changing the modern world. And so I always thought, all right, how do I get somebody to feel my presence every single day and get them inspired? So we started these daily calls. And so every morning at 9 a.m., we would do a call and call it a firm-wide coaching call. And every morning at 9 a.m., and we realized that was people's drive times. So it was like a drive call, people would plug into it, et cetera. So Monday we started doing a call, there was a specific topic on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So we had 5 days of calls. We put out more content than coaching organizations in our space, which is insane. And we were a business, right? And when I interviewed people, they would actually tell me the thing they loved the most about staying plugged into our culture was the cadence of those calls. They knew they could plug back into the hive, the culture, the heartbeat of the company with those calls. So if you can do that for culture, something that is soft and not intangible, you can also do it for mechanical things, mm-hmm. as well. So I'll give you a very simple activity. We had 11 high-level managers tracking a very big goal. So I said, well, how do we get all the managers on the same page? Every morning at 9:45, this is a call example, but every morning at 9:45, each of the managers, we would get on a phone call, and it was all sales. So they would say, hey, how many appointments did I have yesterday? And how many appointments am I committed to having today? So you'd get on the call, and Jason, it would be your turn, and you would say 3-0. That means you have zero. Tomorrow when you show up on the call, there are no zeros because you are extremely uncomfortable. And just the cadence of that accountability every single day instantly lifted our entire culture up. That's very like mechanical, getting on a call. But people are like, oh yeah, that's boring. But you don't realize it's not boring when money starts dropping in millions to the bottom line because 11 people got on a call for 15 minutes a day. Right? And that's all it was.
Yeah.
And people are too afraid. I don't say enforce accountability, but invite, mm-hmm. accountability. Everyone, when you have accountability enforced on you, it's like you don't want to be a part of it, and it's
the obligation. Yeah,
there's too much friction. But when accountability is invited, mm-hmm. saying, hey, I want to hit your goals because I know out of those 11 people, when they hit certain goals, they got bonuses. You can say, hey, as part of your bonus goal, we're doing this call. Oh, no problem. I'm on for 15 minutes a day. And we just went 15 minutes every single day.
Yeah, and I can see it gets competitive, and also there's a guy I know, he likes the phrase, embarrass people into success. And that's what happens. You show up, you say 3-0, and the guy before you and the girl after you are like 5-4, 6-2. Oh. You feel small, and yeah. You don't want to feel that way anymore. And as we know, people are more motivated to move away from pain than they are towards pleasure.
And people don't realize this, I actually had managers actually say 0-0 on the call, right? Not for long. The 0-0 will happen.
What do you do when you hear that? as a leader?
So great question. What I do is I restate the number, pause, and just go to the next person. So I say, Jason, 00, right? Tiffany, that's it. Go to the next person.
Yeah.
That's it. And so that just totally like embeds it in them, and they don't want next day Sharon saying Jason 00, right?
Not a chance.
You don't want that. And yeah. The interesting, everything people always in today's world feel like they need to automate everything. Like, oh, this needs to zap into here. This needs to automate into here. Like at some point, you and I talk about this, nothing happens until someone sells something.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're selling a $9 ebook, that's one thing. You can run a funnel and go to Puerto Rico. But that's not what we're doing. Like, you can never have a 7, 8, 9, 10 figure business that way. You need, at some point, you need people and systems.
Totally. Yeah, 100%. And the way that it's interesting to me is that it's like all these businesses are online and they're virtual now. And this is it's a new way of scaling. It's a new way of systems.
Yeah.
Like 40 years ago, so I just finished John Rockefeller's biography, Titan, which was, I don't know if you ever studied.
Amazing.
Yeah. Oh, you've read it?
Amazing.
It's so good. And one of my favorite ideas that he embedded at Standard Oil was everyone trains the replacement. That's like this huge thing in the culture, right? Like such an eye-opening idea. But everyone at Standard Oil at 26 Broadway in New York City, they're all under the same roof. Today, you're scaling an 8 to 9 figure online company. People are all over the world. You got a team in the Philippines, you have people in Florida, you got a guy in Washington, you get a guy in London, I'm living in Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
You know, like you have people everywhere. And the systems that will drive the things you want to happen, they're different. And in the books that were written just even a couple of years ago, those books no longer serve for people who want to replace
total
hustle and scale. Right?
So in our company, we're 100% virtual and by design. I went from having 22 Class A locations in California to saying, I don't want this anymore. It was more from a talent perspective. I wanted to be able to say, regardless of where you are, we have the chance to hire you for your chance for you to contribute. And we did everything. We do everything on video. But my COO and I, who helped me with the growth of TELUS, he said, hey, systems are good, but something precedes the systems. And it's an artifact. You need some artifact. So one of our artifacts is a team standards document. People don't talk about that stuff. A lot of times it's the CEO saying, we should all get on a Zoom call every morning at 9 o'clock. Well, sure, I get that. But now that is, again, forced on me.
Yes.
As opposed to being aligned into a team standard. So we have a team standards document. It's not long, it's one page, maybe 10 bullet points. But as a team, over a 90-day period, we added and subtracted from it. So for example, small things like, we show up for every video call that's been scheduled, or it's just you're telling people what the standards are. If I am late on a deadline, you can call me out publicly. So now when someone calls me out publicly, I can't say anything because I've agreed to a team standard, you know? And so we write out team standards. And so when you write the artifact out, when I say artifact, it's just something you're agreeing upon.
Mm-hmm.
Most leaders, for some reason, they impose their will on the company as opposed to saying, hey, can we have a team artifact that agrees upon this? Sure, I can veto things because my standard is here and your standard is here. So we need to always agree to the highest standard. But once you have a standards document, like it was amazing.
Did you guys, who built that standards document? Was it the whole team? Was it you and the COO?
Yeah, so what we did was we had one, I'll give you this very simple process. We had one call and everyone went in turn. It was only 13 of us at that time. And we talked about it. And my COO went back and he wrote 10 bullet points, sent it to the team and said, we're gonna discuss this again next week for 30 minutes. Came back and he's like, did I capture this correctly? Went point by point and then said, I'm gonna share this document with you. Go ahead and make edits if you'd like. And then that became the guiding document. So instead of forcing it on people, we just took the ideas, put the document together and did that. And the one thing that we do, Jason, which is super interesting, is we have a 30 minutes all hands call every week. It's Wednesdays at 4:30. And what we do with that is we don't talk work. So sometimes somebody presents on their favorite book. Sometimes we talk team standards. Sometimes we talk about most embarrassing experience, whatever it may be. You give a chance to put work aside and say, this is a culture call. And so there's another time on the calendar from a cadence perspective, since we're all distributed, we don't have water coolers anymore.
Right.
Right. So that becomes kind of the digital water cooler.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're consistently adapting these systems for a new virtual business, which is the world that we live in now.
Yeah.
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 It's so good.
Yeah.
It is. We just started, I can't tell you if it's great or terrible idea. I don't know yet, but we just started last week something we're calling Weekly Growth Pods.
Awesome.
And What I realize, it's very something similar to what you're talking about here, is that we have, there's certain parts of our company that have a certain lag measure that they're trying to hit, right? A certain outcome, right? Whether it's like this product pod. So we have two products, they each have their own pod.
Yeah.
Our YouTube has its own pod, our Instagram has its own pod.
Yeah.
And there's an outcome goal, right? And then there's the two or three lead measures for each one.
Awesome.
And it's 15 minutes each week and the pod meets together and we just go over our lead measures, are we there, are we not, what adjustments we need to make, and then boom, great, are you clear, and the next, great, I'll see you next week, and you just go through them.
Yeah.
And literally, it's only been a week, but the feedback I've gotten from everyone on the team has been like, this is what we needed.
Yeah.
It's just that, that whole idea, though, it came from you and this idea of cadence of accountability, because it's like, you figure out, what is it we need, how can I create a cadence where the needs are met? And it's just scheduled every week at the same time. It's just, it's so simple, but.
Yeah. What's super fascinating is, I think you and I've shared this story with you. So a little over three years ago, I was not well, I was sick. And probably like at the time when I originally like met you, I was okay coming out of some health stuff. My doctor said to me, he says, hey Sharon, your numbers on your lab work looks better in the mornings than in the evenings. Because I had done so many tests. And he said, just wake up earlier, you'll live longer. And I was the grind, hustle, night owl kind of guy.
You were?
Yeah, totally.
Okay.
I was a total night owl, and I got my best work done, I thought, from 8:30 p.m. when my kids went to bed till midnight, 1 o'clock, and then I would just sleep in, wake up at 8, 9:30, and that, knowing that I created a lot in the evening. So I was like, how am I gonna wake up early? And he's like, well, if you wanna live longer, you should wake up early. So I called three friends originally, and I'm like, hey guys, I need some accountability. I know that I will not let you down if I know that you're part of this. So I said, I'm gonna wanna wake up at 5 a.m. for 1 week straight. Can I call you at 5 a.m.? They were like, that's just weird, Sharon. You know, like, what are you gonna say? So I said, I'll have a message, something funny, something inspirational, whatever, but no more than 3 to 4 minutes. They said, okay, so I created a conference call number. I called in, I could hear them chime in. I shared this message and I was up. And if you're sharing a message for 3 to 5 minutes, you're awake.
Mm-hmm.
And I woke up so I had to be up. If not, I would let these people down. I realized then that, oh my gosh, I do better with public accountability because I know I'm letting people down. And that's one, I just realized that about myself. Well, those three people invited three more, invited 10 more, invited 20 more, invited 100 more. Today we have 3,800 people on the call, roughly speaking, so just under 4,000 people on the call, that call in to this call at 5 a.m. every morning, Pacific time, and I just share one message. Now it's even more painful for me. There's no way, like if I don't show up on the call, there's like 3,800 people waiting.
Mm-hmm.
And so from an accountability perspective, like I've completely changed my life. And the other day for my birthday, my dad asked me, he goes, hey, like looking back, what have you created? What are you most proud of? And of all the things I've done, just apart from family, I'm most proud of that because I'm most proud of creating this 5 a.m. club because I switched my natural biorhythm to something else based only on cadence of accountability that I will not let 3,800 strangers down. I don't even know these people. And it's free for people to join, et cetera. But I'm committed to doing it for life.
You can't ever get out.
I can't ever get out of it.
You're stuck, bro.
Yeah, I got a couple of guest speakers to like, you know, save me some time when I'm on vacation, et cetera. But I'm on 7 days a week, 365 days.
7 days.
7 days a week.
Sundays included.
Weekends included, holidays included, Thanksgiving included, every day included.
Yeah.
And because that's cadence.
Do you plan out what you're going to share on those calls?
No, and that's the best, like that's the most interesting part because about 2 years ago, I realized that I wanted to practice. So I think you and I talked about public speaking and you did this exercise with me. You said, hey, tell me the name of you, like you started, you picked one and you kept daisy chaining topics.
Yes.
You know, remember, hey, here you're wearing a Gucci shirt. I went to the store, here's in the mall.
Yes.
When did that? So I thought, well, why don't I try that? So at 4:59 a.m. when I hit mute all, the topic that's in my mind, I have to take that story and deliver a message.
Yes.
So now I can do that on demand. I've done over 1,000 calls live with no prep. So at any point in time, anywhere in the world, I can deliver a 5-minute inspirational message because I practiced to do that.
Yep. As anyone did.
Yeah. You know,
like there's no way anyone would get good at that without practice and reps. The other thing is that sub skill right there of having an idea and then being able to elegantly communicate it to someone, that might be the most valuable skill in the world. To quote John Rockefeller again, he said, the ability for someone to deal with people and communicate with them is the highest priced skill under the sun, and I will pay more for that skill than any other in the world.
Awesome.
In copy, we talk about how you have like a copywriter, a marketer, salesperson, they have the idea in their head or in their heart, right? And then they have the expression of the idea.
Yeah.
And it's almost here where people screw up. I know the idea, I know what I need to say or communicate to this person, but when I have to type it or say it, I can't, it just comes out wrong or it doesn't come out in the way that I want to make that the most impact that I can. And being able to bridge that gap where you have the big idea, the winning idea, and the expression of it, that the most successful people, the most influential people, they're the ones who have mastered that ability to take those two things and just get it out.
But would you agree that, yeah, maybe 1% of the population or even smaller are maybe naturally gifted with that in a certain medium, but the mastery, but the folks that have mastered that have daily practice. You write every day. You write an email every single day. I write an email every single day, very different. We should talk about that at some point, but it's like you practice that skill. Like, you've gotten the ability to say, I have an idea, I can communicate that in 12 sentences or 3.5 minutes or whatever you say, but it's practice.
Mm-hmm.
And
one of the things I always teach my clients is one arrow, not 10. Most people, they need 10 arrows to hit the bullseye with their message. You need to get to the point where you can just do it in one arrow. And it's those people, like we all know those people where they make a point or a quote or an idea and they just say it so right that you look at that and you go, no one will ever say that better. I'm not even gonna try and outdo it. I'm just gonna borrow that and that's my line from now on.
It's so crazy that you said that. My partner, he's been my partner 25 years. He's a former attorney, ran one of the largest law firms in the world. He is the master of the one-line email. The master, right? Like, you could write 14 paragraphs and he would reply all. And he writes the one line and it's thoughtful, kind, and directly to the point. And it's one line, right? And I go, how does he do that? So one day, several years into the room, I asked him, I go, how do you write this one? He goes, let me let you in on a secret. During the old school BlackBerry days, he had fractured his left hand. So he could only write with the crack wheel, right? And so he could only write with one hand. So for like 3 months in very important court cases, et cetera, at being an attorney, he wrote one-line responses with his like thumb and pinky. And he could only write one line, like otherwise it would hurt. And so for like 3-4 months, while his left hand was healing, he wrote with his, holding this big device in one hand.
So good.
And he learned to write, he learned the one arrow.
Yes.
And so he would read, he would think, and he would just deploy the one arrow in his BlackBerry.
So good.
And now that just became the style.
He's a master of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and when people are trying to get better at skills, this is something I teach my skill groups a lot, is like, if you want to get good, let's say, at writing a sales letter, you don't do it by writing sales letters. You break it down into component parts and you dive deep into that component. And only once you've mastered that chunk, then you go to the next one. Like for this guy, it wasn't how do I master all emails? It was just how do I master really short responses? Like, he broke it down into one small part.
Right.
Not enough people, they don't do that. And the problem with copy is like Gary Halbert, amazing.
Amazing.
Brilliant. He gave this advice to everyone to copy sales letters by
hand. Yeah, yeah.
That is not the best way to learn it because you're not breaking down the component parts. What I figured out, so talent is overrated, which I'm sure you've read. He talks about how Benjamin Franklin became one of the great essayists of all time, not by writing a lot of essays, but he would take the best essays he knew and then he would deconstruct them line by line and just work on one part of it, like the intro. So we take 20 great intros, rewrite them by hand, and then try and... he'd forget them and then try and rewrite them from memory and see how close he got to, like little things like that.
Yeah.
So what I have a bunch of my copywriters that I train now doing is, let's say we take a Gary Halbert sales letter, you're gonna take a note card and you're gonna write one line on each note card for this whole letter. Then you're gonna shuffle up all the cards, you're gonna put them down and you're gonna reconstruct the sales letter in the order that Gary Halbert wrote it to train you
so good.
How to learn the train of thought, the structure of persuasion, which is so much more important than the content of persuasion. Like the words don't matter as much as the context that they are being communicated in.
I remember when you and I were having lunch recently, I showed you a new practice that I started in this year where I wake up every morning, the drawing, and I draw. I'm not a drawer. I draw boxes, but I draw. I pick one idea, and I draw it on one page. I do it on my iPad, but I do it on one page. So I have to, deconstruct, interpret, decode this idea, whatever it may be, and put it on one piece of paper so that if I handed it to somebody, so my filter is, if I handed that piece of paper to somebody, it is almost like a lesson plan for them to teach. That's my filter. So I can just vomit an idea on a piece of paper and it makes sense to me, but it's not a lesson plan. So my idea is, how do I build a one-page lesson plan on an idea that I have?
What's an example of one that you...
So you and I have been talking about a lot about when, you know, I love email, and I took multiple people's super signatures and I just deconstructed them. So I said, hey, here's how Dean Jackson writes it, here's how Taki Moore writes it, here's how Jason Capital writes it, here's how Bader Skoulian writes it. And I was like, oh, this is, how can I, what does a super signature look like? And then I just deconstructed that just one thing and built the reverse pyramid around it, do the topics around. So anybody can take that. So now when I work with the CEOs that I mentor, I can be like, hey, listen, hand this to your copywriter with the character diamond. Like, you're done. Like, I don't need to help you write your super signature. You already have a framework for that.
Yes.
And a lot of these are coming from questions that people ask. And I'm like, oh my gosh, now I'm doing one-off like sessions with clients about this stuff, which is so boring to me. And which is inefficient. But if I can give someone a lesson plan, a framework, how much farther can they go? And they probably will do it in a much more creative way. As opposed to now I'm writing it with my bias, which is uncool.
Yes.
So every day, every morning, I try to do it every morning because I wake up at 5. I try to get one idea down on paper. I was just looking at it the other day. So I have 6 months worth of ideas right now this year, and it's just framework after framework, and it's really gotten all the dark stuff out of my head.
Yeah, it's almost cathartic.
Super therapeutic, yeah.
Yeah. I told you a few weeks ago, so obviously I'm in Puerto Rico, and I got a hotel room at the St. Regis, which is on the other side of the island, just for 2 days, right? 2 days, and phone was off for those entire 2 days. And I locked the hotel room, I barely ate, and all I did was just work on taking all this information and case studies and intel and IP that I have, and then putting it into frameworks like you're talking about, and building principles around each one, and now I have this database of I created, in 2 days I created 21 of them, and it was like
amazing.
But the amount of, just the clarity I felt doing that just felt so much better, because like you said before, I hate doing one-off activities.
Yeah.
I hate doing something, even if it's helpful, knowing that beyond the ROI of this one moment, there is no second order, third order, that's it. Like, and I hate that, and that's what my business used to be. And that's why I used to be, you know, at dinner and then having to apologize to the people I'm with and being like, I got to take this call. Or I got to leave for 30 minutes and work on this thing. Because when you're doing all the one-off things, you're constantly in that hustle mode. Now when you have frameworks and systems, you're in scale mode, and it's this totally different world.
And you know, the average person always asks us, right? Hey, so, you know, I have my 9-to-5. I can't leave it yet. Or I'm an entrepreneur. I feel like I'm working all day, every day. Yeah, Jason, you can take a couple of days. Sharon, you can take the morning. You can wake up at 5. You and I talk about the how a lot, right? Like, people are like, oh, vision, mission, values. I'm like, I appreciate that. But like, what do I do with it, right?
Correct.
The how is super important. So I will tell you, people underestimate what 15 minutes can do. And you can, in a year, you can write a book in 15 minutes a day if you plan for a month and start writing in month 2. Most people are like, I'm gonna write 15 minutes a day. They start writing in January. It's January 4th, they've written 4 pages, and they're like, I got all these other cognitive blocks, so I'm out. Instead, what you and I do is, before you went on the 2-day trip, you, in your drives on your golf cart in Puerto Rico, on your walks on the beach with Nat, you were just like, you were marinating on what those 2 days structurally would be like, right?
Totally.
When you got there, you were in mechanical flow.
Yes.
I think a lot of people, like when I tell people, hey, don't write a book for 12 months, write a book for 11 months, prep for the first month on what you're gonna do for the next 11 months. So now, even if that means prompts, outlines, and things like that, where you can say, hey, June 7th, I'm gonna write this. That's cool, because you show up, at least you write something and you're not stuck. I love the gurus who give the advice that, oh, work for 15 minutes a day. And I'm like, well, no, you never told people that working for 15 minutes a day is not the answer. You never told them how to get ready to work for 15 minutes a day.
Yes.
And to me, like, that is the problem. So a lot of times, the reason why I like to say I have generally a good week is because on Sunday mornings, I plan my week. And I don't like to do Sunday nights because I get stressed out. And you know, Sunday afternoons are time with the family and we do whatever. But Sunday mornings when the house is quiet, if a fire came up that I need to put out, I can still do it. But I just plan for an hour. I'm like, hey, what would make this week a good week? Mm-hmm. This is what I'm doing Monday morning. This is what I'm doing Monday afternoon. I'm going to take some time off. So you can actually think about it. That way when you show up for that time block, you can deliver. And you've already premeditatively created a result for that. So don't underestimate, I tell our listener today, don't underestimate like a 15, 20 minute time block, but plan and design that before you actually have to show up for
exactly,
that.
Exactly, yeah. And if it's something that you're gonna be doing more than once, have a freaking framework for it.
Yeah.
So you, like, think once.
Yeah.
Right? Think once, never have to think about how to do that thing
yeah.
again. Like, and people get this in pockets. They get this for a sales call. You have a script or an outline you use for every sales call. Why don't you have a script for every area of your life? The person I know who's best at this is Taki.
Yeah.
Right. So Taki has a framework for
everything.
Every piece of the business from the front door to the backyard pool, like the whole customer journey, every touch point he could ever have. No matter what's happening, he just goes to his Google Doc, whatever, and he goes, oh, yeah, here's the little triangle I use for that. Let's pull that out, use that here, I'm done, right? I remember Bezos first told me years ago when I was younger, when he would get stopped in airports, it would make him uncomfortable. He didn't, you know, he's introverted, yeah. etc. So he built a framework. What do I do when someone comes up to me? And he goes, what's your name? Where are you from? What product of mine have you bought? Good luck, right? So he had a framework for even that.
I love it.
And you notice people have frameworks for all, like, the most accepted, for all this different stuff.
There's a very tactical idea that I learned, and I use it every day. We on email, for example, we spend, you and I get a lot of email, but the emails that we respond to, right? The average person spends a lot of time, I'd say 40%, responding the same responses, the canned responses every time. And a lot of time people will say, oh, I just have this document where you can copy paste, etc. Even more mechanically, what I learned was I took those 8, 9, 10 responses that I always do, and I made 8, 9, 10 email signatures. Mm. So now when someone writes me, I just go signature, podcast response, send. So now I don't even have to go copy paste anything. Right? And so people think
so
that, like, but when people say, oh, your systems are automated, what they don't realize is that it's not about efficiency, it's about precision. There's a difference. Mm-hmm. Everyone thinks that, like, different people use systems for efficiency. I don't care about efficiency. I just want it done beautifully every time. And I don't want my emotion to write a different message. Mm-hmm. So yes, I can go copy paste it, but I want precision. I want it to be the same font. I don't want a lot of times people will copy paste it. The Word font is different from your email font or from your Gmail font. And like, I want precision. I want it to look beautiful every single time. So automation and systems to me are for precision, not just efficiency. So even if I guarantee every single person today has at least 3 or 4 responses that they use all the time. They should just put them in the 3 or 4 different signatures, mm-hmm. do it once, and even do the PS if you need to. PS, thanks so much, smiley face, whatever, it doesn't matter. But you do that over and over, and like your life, and I get a little joy every time I use a signature. I'm like, oh, that's cool. Like, not that I saved a second, but it was beautiful that that process worked.
Yes, 100%. Are there any other areas of your life where you feel like you need those and you haven't figured those out yet? Or have you gotten it down pretty much?
I have it down. Like, I'm so nerdy that, for example, I'll tell you this. I build content. You're a machine. Like, you have this natural gift to show up and share and educate like no other. Like, you're amazing. To me, my content creation is a little different. Like, I have to be very tactical with the clients that I talk to. So I write for 4 hours a week. I have a Tuesday afternoon block generally. I create 33 pieces of content. That's how I do it. But what I was doing was, oh, I need to write 5 emails for next week. I had this matrix. I didn't want to do that anymore. So this is really nerdy. I set up like these auto Zapier stuff, and it just auto zaps into my to-do list on Tuesday morning. I didn't want it carried over from Monday, from next week. It just auto zaps it on Tuesday morning. So when I show up on Tuesday morning in my to-do list, it just puts it in my calendar. So I just, it auto zaps it. I know what it is. And then when I'm done, I just click complete. And then the next week, it just auto zaps it again. So if I want to add a 34th piece of content, I just set it up into the zap and it just auto zaps. So I had to set it up once. And now it took away all the planning and the stress. And now I just know kind of what happens. That may be a little nerdy, but what it does for me is I show up, it's precision. I show up and I deliver exactly what I need to do so I can keep the cadence.
Yeah. So we were having lunch a few weeks ago at Pelican Hill. And we talked about, we don't have to say company names or anything, but a client you worked with, you engineered a deal where you had kind of your hand in both cookie jars.
Yeah.
Like not in a greedy way, just you happen to be involved in both companies and you, but what struck me as most insight, and you can maybe give the background in a second, but what struck me most about it is just you saw an outcome or an iteration that no one else saw. And I want to know, how did you see that? And you can give context first, everyone listening.
Yeah, so good. Thank you. So we have a fund, and we invest in companies around the world. At any given time, there's at least 24 companies either that we're advising or invested in some way. Many of them are industry specific. They're either real estate or consumer related. So they're somewhat kind of, they play in a similar sandbox because I can try to add value to them. It just so happened, and this actually has happened a couple of different times, but this happened where we found there were two companies that I was an investor in that were in talks of, the deal's done, so and they're private, so we don't know a lot of information, but two companies that would have been good fit for each other. So 24 months ago, I originally mentioned it to one company, and I said, hey, you guys should have this conversation, let me make the introduction. So I made the introduction. And as companies evolve, I was like, oh my gosh, like this company A's, the bigger company's business plan could really use company B's business plan. Now, I wonder how they would come together. So a lot of times when I'm thinking, I just get in the car and I drive. I, for some reason, motion helps me think. And I thought, wouldn't it be amazing if these guys bought these guys? It would just completely change their business. But how would it be a win-win for both? And that's when the discussion started to happen. So I presented the idea, and I didn't have a lot to do with it during the process, but I ignited the idea. And suddenly, 18 months later, one of the companies were like, hey, we're in the process. And I was like, wait, what? Like, you didn't even, but we're stuck. And I said, oh, okay, well, here are some ideas on how to work through that stuckness. But I think that when you have, I think it's the domain expertise. A lot of times people, when I was young, my father would tell me, do you want to be a mile wide and an inch deep? Or do you want to be a mile deep and an inch wide? And I thought, I want to be a mile wide. I want to know a little bit of everything. I want to get, I want to be really friendly, gregarious. But I've realized over the years that I don't know anything about oil and natural gas, like Dan Pena. I don't know anything about aerospace. But real estate and consumer, like I know that's that vertical inside out. And when someone gives me one idea, I know the daisy chain of the ideas. And that's what also happens, Jason, is that when something happens in that space, like when there's new innovation in the space, you almost always hear about it because people will say, oh my gosh, you're starting a real estate tech company and you've not talked to Sharon yet. Like they start to have those conversations. So I get to hear about everything that is new, whether or not I want to play in that sandbox. But now I can see the daisy chain because I've either thought about a pain point or tried to help somebody through it. But
yeah.
I think the key is an inch wide and a mile deep, and you and I talk a lot about here are the three skills. Like you are the king of those skills. There is nobody else that does copy, speaking, closing like you. Like you wake up every morning and you see somebody do something, you're like, okay, that's the piece that needs to be in this curriculum because you know where that lies. And you don't have them domain expertise, you don't have a map to put the, where do you put it in your value chain?
Yeah, depth, right? I can think about the word depth as you're talking. But when you're looking at like someone's listening right now, how do they know what do I go deep into? Because the I don't think anyone disagrees with depth. I think the fear is the sacrifice of what am I not going to be able to look at.
Right. I will tell you the greatest gift that you can give yourself is to make a choice on what you're not going to work on. It is humanly impossible. Like you can never. How many experts do we know who are an expert at everything? It just doesn't exist.
Can I give you the best yeah. phrase I heard the other day about this? It's
you can either be a slave to yes or a magician of no. And I was like, oh, that's so good.
That's good, right?
Yeah, slave to yes, magician of no.
It took a lot of time for me to be comfortable saying, ruthlessly saying no, and I still struggle with it. And there's two things that I struggle with, and let me be really vulnerable. One thing I struggle with is, oh my gosh, that's a really cool new funnel tool. I need to learn how to do it. But I have a funnel team. Like, why do I need to? I can hit forward and I'm done. I know mechanically how it works, but saying no to things that are not in my zone of genius. And the second thing is, I've gotten better about this, but I still wonder like what people think about me. You know, and I think I've noticed that the years and the adventures that I've let that go are the ones that really took off, mm-hmm. where I did not care about what XYZ person thought, shared, felt, was going to say. And if someone tells me that they don't care about what other people think of them, you're lying. You know, yes, you may have reduced the noise, and I know you've done a really good job with your meditation and your yoga to reduce the noise. Mm-hmm. But sometimes that happens to me. Like I get like, oh my gosh, what would Jason say about this, right? And it's okay, but it shouldn't be a negative influence.
Sure.
And so the two things I still struggle with are, how do I say no to the things that I've agreed to say no to, and also like, how do I get out of the zone of people?
Yeah, and for me, I'll tell you one of the things that I struggle with a lot, and I've gotten better at it, but at least a couple years ago, a huge problem in it, is, you know, like they say that there's those, that business level, let's say 500K to 3-4 million a year.
Yeah.
Going to 10 million, those are completely different business, and it's a different set of skills someone needs to learn to scale. And I was really good at this one. I didn't know how to get to that next level. And I was ashamed or embarrassed to ask people, hey, how do you do a spreadsheet? How do you do, system do you, like simple things like that, that you would think a successful entrepreneur would know, I didn't know. And I was ashamed to ask those things.
Yeah.
And I got much, much better at asking them. And now, you know, I feel like I've most of it figured out. I'm always learning, but that was one thing for me that was like a big thing. And I think there's a lot of people out there who struggle with that same level of asking that. The other thing I think, just related to what you were talking about, that came out of my mind is like, I don't think anyone should, you never want to get to a point where you don't give a fuck what anyone thinks, because then you're a homeless guy pissing on street corner. What you want is you should predetermine whose opinion you're going to care
that.
About.
That's good.
So that, and you almost think of it like two circles.
Yeah.
And one circle, this is who I care about. And the other circle is other. It's the rest of the world.
You made the choice. Yeah,
there's three or four or five people who I care about. And that way you train your brain. So when you're like, well, what would Jason think? What would Sharon think? What would Dan Pena think? What would, I don't know, Donald Trump think?
Yeah.
You know, whatever, whoever it is. And then you start, because you know, your brain can't focus on two things at once. You're focusing on those people, what they would think. And now you're holding yourself to their standard as a result. And it's just practice.
So I'll tell you this, and you asked, we veered away from the question, like, how do you go deep on something, right? When I spoke on your stage at High Status Summit, it was awesome, because I said, you know, we're all influencer junkies, right? Like, it's the...
You... I got it. I'll say it, because you won't. It was only for my audience, and I'm aware. Sharon said influencer whores. It was amazing.
And every freaking day, all you get is like opinion after opinion after opinion after opinion after opinion. I am not joking. Save your life. Stop being an influencer whore.
And I'll just point out, the 1,000 people there, I got to write this one down. This is such a good, influencer junkies.
Because it's insane. Like, we've got, that's what we have in our feed, right? We're like, we've got the Gary V's, the Grant Cardone's, like everybody said all these things. And we go from swipe to swipe to swipe to swipe. And I'm like, oh my gosh. So in 2019, I thought I would take my own advice, right? 2019, I muted on Instagram. Like, I muted all of them. I follow them. I just muted. I don't listen to them right now. And every month, I have picked one person. And instead of going deep, all I have done is that month, I only read, listen, think, and follow their work. And just from a time perspective, so I give them 30 days. So the month of May, I told you that I texted you after May, like it was the Dan Pena month. Mm-hmm. It was a really painful month. Like it was just so painful every time. But I needed that for 30 days. I listened to, So I read your first 100 million. I listened to everything, all the podcasts he's done. I watched like all his Brian Rose interviews like 3 times. I did everything. I saw him on your stage. It was a Dan Pena deep dive month. And so it was not like I didn't, I just, it was immersion.
Yes.
It was almost like how do you learn Spanish, right? It was immersion for the month. So I think if you want to go deep, you just create the time for it. But the time was not picking Dan Pena. The time was not picking anyone else. That winner was saying, no, I'm not choosing anybody else. And then, you know, for the next month, I picked the next person. So I've gone 5 deep dives so far, and I've got 2. And I just planned out my deep dives.
Yeah.
And it's amazing for me because now, after like the 15th of the month, you start to see how the person naturally thinks. And that's what you want. You don't want the, oh, here's a quote by Dan Pena. You want, like, why did he say that? What was the transformative experience that created that quote?
Yes.
And when you can live into that,
And those insights aren't available in superficiality. They're only available to those willing to go deep.
Yeah.
Right? Right? Like someone we know says, right, to get the results that only 5% of people have, you have to be willing to do what 95% of people want, which is depth.
Yeah.
And most people don't do that.
And I think it's just time. And I don't think we give ourselves the gift of that. Of that time, and 30 days is not a long time to go deep on one person. I guarantee you, like if you spend 30 days tuning everybody out and just watching Jason Capital, reading Higher Status, and like listening to the podcast, and you know, buying the course, like joining Kaizen, like you will be a whole different entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And because, dude, you put your heart and soul into this thing, and I think what people start to see is the golden threads between all of it, because there is what is common to all of those, you, and then now they start to see like the you come out.
Yes, and where it's all coming from on a deep level, totally. And just to go on what you're saying before that, like if someone is listening and they're like, I don't have time to go deep into something that could literally change my life, then you need to replace the hustle with scale in your life more than anyone, right? It's like Russell Simmons, when someone's like, it says, you know, I don't have time, 20 minutes a day to meditate. He goes, great, you need an hour then. Right, same thing.
Yeah. Right?
If you're so busy in your business that you don't have a calm, reflective time to go deep into someone's study or work or whatever, then you are at the hustle level.
Yeah.
And it's going to kill
you.
It's going to lead to what you said was perfect before.
Yeah, tired and resentful.
You're going to be tired and resentful. And you need to get out of that before it not only hurts you, but it hurts your kids. It hurts your wife or your husband or the people, your employee. It's,
you hustle and it doesn't work. And then you get angry or upset or sad or frustrated. You don't express, you repress. And now you, psychologists will call it, you then project on others, which is their resentfulness comes in. It's a terrible spiral to get into. I think Gary Vee is great, but the idea of hustle without context and the way he gives it is all wrong. And all the entrepreneurs I admire, not a single one would ever tell you to hustle.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Not a single one. They're systems and scale.
Right, and I think the stress comes when people are not organized. And I say, if a CEO of a $100 million company can't write up their planner, this is not a picture of their computer or their phone. I want it.
It's written.
And I actually tell, I kid you not, look at your computer or your... and write it on the, I send them the planner. Write it on the planner, take a picture of the planner and text it to me. Because that tactile, stuff just, and when they send it to me, I look at it, and I pinch and zoom and I see what's on it. And I say, wait, replace gas? Like, what is that? Like, you want to run a $100 million business? Like, that should not be on your list. And now there's deeper accountability there. So if organization before, if you show up at work and just dive into your email, you will get, you're in hustle.
Sure.
Can you just say, hey, what's my day going to look like? What's my outcome? How do I plan for this? Like 5-10 minutes. Sharpen the sword for 10 minutes before you start, you know, going being a samurai warrior.
Or cutting down that tree.
Yeah.
So true. Okay. Well, dude, this was amazing. I think we're going to need a part 2 at some point because I feel like there's
anything for you, man. Yeah. Anything
this
for you.
It's always so much fun to hang out with you, brother.
I appreciate
and,
you.
Everyone, thank you so much for hanging out and sharing your time and energy with us, and we will see you soon. Peace.
Hey, did you find that valuable? If so, we just put together a brand new program where I'm gonna be mentoring you every single week, giving you a new high income skill every single week, the same way I've mentored my first 2 millionaire students. If you wanna join us, click that link in the description and claim your 7-day free trial so you can see why people are buzzing so loud for this. Make sure you hit that subscribe button too, and I'll see you soon.